During Holy Week this year, I was asked to give a series of talks in a church in Belfast, and two congregations had come together for this event, and they were a very diverse group. There were the traditional churchgoers, largely older women, the backbone of any parish, with a lifetime of faithful service behind them. And then there were the new arrivals, refugees and asylum seekers, largely Iranian, young women and men, and some older men. Obviously, English was their second language, for some a very poor second. And the idea was that there would be a short opening act of worship, and then I would talk for about half an hour, and this would be followed by a period of reflection with some appropriate background music and a closing prayer. What struck me on the first evening was the acute sense of listening, probably partly because half the congregation didn't understand a lot of what I was saying, but there was also a deep sense of presence. What you sometimes pick up in a place that has been prayed in a lot. In our debrief at the end of the first session, we felt that we should break the next evening up more and punctuate it with several short periods of silent reflection. That worked well, and I felt we were going deeper and growing closer together. We had foot washing, something that had never been done before in this church. There were two stations for the foot washing, one at the front and one at the back. Our Iranian friends were literally running to wash feet and have their feet washed, and at a slower, more reticent pace, some of the long-term members. One minister described it afterwards as wonderful, holy chaos. It was deeply moving. On the last evening, after talking for a while, I led the assembled company, who by this stage were much more relaxed at what was happening, and so perhaps more ready to let go and to enter into the experience, I led them into some prayer exercises in forgiveness. And this prayer was embraced and held by the intimacy of silence, a silence that was vibrant with presence. And at the end, a young Iranian woman came up to me, and the tears were pouring down her face, and she said, "I live very deep suffering. This is my life. My daughter was taken from me by force. But tonight, I have been able to forgive all those who did it." And she was smiling through her tears. It was deeply humbling. And I felt that if this was the only miracle to have taken place all week, it was enough, more than enough. Something had been communicated. Something had been received and transmitted. And not only or merely through words. It was the gaze of love. I've given us the theme for today, the gaze of love received and transmitted. Where did such a phrase come from? I was invited to participate in a conference entitled Intimacy, the Divine Ambush. It's an intriguing title and a very challenging one, considering that most people find the concept of intimacy extremely difficult. One of the speakers was James Finley, a one-time novice of Thomas Merton. And at one point, he posed a question that absolutely riveted me, and I could spend the rest of my life exploring its depths. The question was, what if infinite love has set its eyes on you for itself alone? And then he followed it up with a statement equally challenging. He said, nothing less than infinite love has the power to name who I am. Over the ensuing months, I found myself being taken over, possessed by this particular what if. And I began to see how so many people of both the Old and New Testaments had been stopped in their tracks by experiencing such a gaze of love, and how their lives had been transformed, either dramatically and suddenly, or more gradually as a consequence. They were people like Abraham and Hagar, like Jacob and Moses, like the psalmist, or Ruth or Elijah, and stepping over the threshold into the Second Testament, they came thick and fast as people from every walk of life encountered the gaze of love incarnated in Jesus. It would be superfluous of me to spell out in detail what we all know already, namely the dominating features of today's world: uncertainty, confusion, fear, oppression, loneliness, and much else that we, certainly in the West, seek to anesthetize by busyness, by the glorification of a two-dimensional world with no mystery, by the acceptance into our vocabulary of outrageous words like post-truth and fake news. But there is another incantation that requires some fine-tuning in order to pick it up, one that bears the hallmarks of mercy, justice, truth, and peace, although by and large it's too easily drowned out by the static of our daily life, by a world that Christopher Fry once described as this great orphanage where no one knows his name and no one comes to claim him. The basic need in every human heart is to know that to someone they are special, that there is at least one other person to whom it matters whether or not they waken up in the morning. In other words, it is the need to know that they are loved and lovable. I would venture to suggest that when everything else is stripped away, that is the primary yearning of most people who turn on their radios every day. Raymond Carver encapsulates this deep desire, which you probably know this, when he writes in a little piece called Late Fragment. And did you get what you wanted from this life even so? I did. And what did you want? To know myself beloved, to feel myself beloved on the earth. The word beloved is an old English word, and any attempt to define it somehow falls short. To me, it's not only a description, beautiful as that may be. It's also a command, an exhortation. If you split the word, if you break it down, what do you get? Be loved. And this is at the very core of the gospel. This is the heart of good news. It's the main reason Jesus came, not to judge or condemn, but to reveal to people how much they are loved. And yet most people find that very difficult to take on board, if they ever do, which I believe is one of the main reasons why there is so much tension and conflict in the world. How do we learn to move out of the world of power into a world of communion and mutual presence? How do we move to a place where we see in each one the essential beauty that is at the heart of every human being? To take time to be present and to be liberated from the fear of loving. In other words, how do we learn to love as Jesus loves? If we began to accept the fact of our own belovedness, then the lusting for power and control and position with all their attendant negativities would recede. And in their place, we would find the new shoots of community, of mercy, justice, truth, and peace. Richard Rohr, whom I believe is one of the prophetic voices for our day, says in one of his earlier books, Everything Belongs, and I just love this, he says, we cannot attain the presence of God because we are already totally in the presence of God. What is absent is awareness. Little do we realize that God is maintaining us in existence with every breath we take. As we take another, it means that God is choosing us now and now and now. We have nothing to attain or even learn. We do, however, need to unlearn some things. People who tune in all around this island, either in their kitchens, their workplaces, their cars, their hospital beds, come with all their baggage from yesterday and their fears and their hopes for tomorrow. Many confusing faith with institutional religion have been disillusioned or felt betrayed and have thrown the baby out with the bathwater. Others have belief systems that manifest themselves as sole possessors of the truth. We've too many of those in the North, I feel, brooking no rivals. Still others sporadically go through the motions just in case there's anything or anyone there. And some have simply rejected everything, opting to live life on a two-dimensional level with no awareness, no acknowledgement of mystery. But there are others, far more than we realize, who are searching and seeking and hungry. With some wonderful and notable exceptions, we in the church, and I can only say this because I'm part of the church, haven't done a particularly good job at communicating the essence of the gospel. There's so much, to use Richard Rohr's word, unlearning to be done. How then do you create a sense of presence over the airwaves? A presence that leads to awareness, that then leads to encounter, so that even by the turning on of a switch or the pressing of a button, an ordinary day can be turned into an extraordinary moment of recognition.